Okay, good afternoon. To reiterate just what Rabbi Shabtai said, I want to also acknowledge again the Froelich Financial Group for sponsoring our afternoon kollel. And this week, Leo and Debbie Petrover for sponsoring the learning on the 2 days in memory of her father, Tzvi Ben Aaron. You have on the source sheets this week, new, the cover page, you have bullets of what we're going to see today. So if you want to look at the Mar Makomos, if you want to reconstruct what we talked about in the shir itself, you'll be able to follow along with the bullets on the cover, and that will remind you next week what we had spoken about in the previous week as well. So I kept my end of the deal, by the way. Here's the page of the Gemara again. I made you the copy. But most of you, I think all of you, didn't keep your end of the deal.
You kept the end of the deal. You didn't.
I did. I said I wasn't going to, but at the end of the shir, I said, here's the deal. Everybody has to bring a person next week, an additional person, and then I'll give you the Gemara. You have to find someone else. Bring someone else.
Rabbi.
Okay, fine.
You know you have 7 kids. You know if you don't enforce what you...
I understand. I thought this was the goodness of my heart. Okay, we're in Maseches Kedushin. In the first parak, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, 30b. Not only did I make you a copy of the Gemara, but I made a bracket to tell you exactly where we're going to begin. So you don't even have to count lines. That is just how generous and kind I felt today. What can I tell you? Lasio Isha, we're back to the Braisa. The Braisa on Chav Tesam and Aleph had listed all of these obligations of a parent onto a child and the child onto a parent. We digressed to speak about the Yitzhahara. We talked about that last week and the way to combat the Yitzhahara with Torah study. But the Braisa had listed over here. Do you have there? Is that the same? Yeah, the Braisa had listed all of these things that a parent is obligated for a child. We covered Bris, Pidyon HaBen, and so on. So the next item in the Braisa's list is Lahasio Isha. A father is obligated to help what's said in the vernacular, though grammatically it's an abuse of the English language, to marry off your children. It's grammatically offensive, but it's nevertheless an expression which is used. To marry off your children. Lahasio Isha. One is obligated to marry off, not your children, but to marry off your son. Lasio Isha, to marry him to a woman. Manolan asked the Gemara, how do we know that? How do we know this is one of the obligations on a father towards a son? Tichsiv, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. The pasuk says, when Yirmiyahu sends to the Jewish people who are found in Bavel, and he says, you're going to be in the exile, you're going to be in the Golos for an extended period. So Yirmiyahu says, Kechu Nashim, take wives, Vaholidu Banim Ubanos, and have children. And take for your sons' wives, and your daughters you should give over to men. So don't, you might have thought that while you're in the exile, while you're in the harshness of the exile, you should abstain, you should refrain from establishing yourself there. Says Yirmiyahu, make yourselves comfortable, you're going to be there for a while, and get married. And get married. So you see from this pasuk that one of the instructions he gave was, Kechu Nashim, you should take your own wife. And when you have children, Kechu Levnechem Nashim, take for your sons wives. Now what's unusual about where the Gemara brings its proof text from? What strikes you?
Navi.
It's Navi, it's Midivrei Kabbalah. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. It's not a pasuk from Chumash. We'll get back to that in a second. So the Gemara first asks, Bishlama Beno, Frek the Gemara Kasha, ask the Gemara. It sounds like from the pasuk that the same way a father is obligated to find a wife for his son, he's obligated to find a husband for his daughter. Ask the Gemara, Bishlama Beno Biyado. I understand that which you have to find for your son, a daughter, it's in the hands of the father. Why? Because normally it's the man who is the initiator, right? Darko Shalish Leilach Achar Isha. The Gemara in the beginning of the first parak of Kedushin. Normally a man is the hunter. And it's true, the man goes out to battle. A man is the hunter. A man is the initiator. Right? Leaving aside whatever a contemporary... I'll get myself in trouble here. But the Gemara understands that the basic... Again, there are exceptions, masculinity, femininity, but it's a male trait to identify what you want and go after it. Man is the initiator. Man is the one, not only from a sociological standpoint, but from a halachic standpoint, as Phil says. From a halachic standpoint, Haisha Niknes, the opening mishnah of the Masechta, the man is the one who gives Kedushin. He gives her an item of value, or right to shtar, or through bia, and she accepts it, she receives it. But since it requires his initiation, I understand how the father could encourage the son, teach the son, take the son's hand in order to get married. Elabito, how can the father find a husband for his daughter? Biyadoi. It's not biyado to accept marriage on behalf of his daughter. We're not talking about Kedusha Ketana, where the father has the ability to accept marriage for the daughter. We're talking about a woman who's of age, who has some sense of independence. So as Rashi writes here, the first underline in Rashi, Bitmia, klum yachol lahargila anashim lasiya, tamakrav esbenosechem tenula anashim. Can the father bring boys by the house one by one? Is he going to take her speed dating? Is he going to put her on a website, on an app, in order to help her get married, such that Yirmiyo should say, find sons-in-law for your daughters? It's not biyado, says the Gemara in answer. No, hachi ka amar lehu. This is what the Gemara meant. This is what Navi Yirmiyo meant. Nitan la midei v'lav shiei v'nechasyei. The man should give his daughter some money, and she'll be able to make herself attractive. She'll be able to buy some nice clothing, get her hair done, get a mani-pedi, get some makeup. Right, or the fact that she just has the money in the bank will be attractive to the guy. Right? Depends on the generation. Why kihechi dekavtu ala inshi? The point is, yes, it is biyado. It is biyado to also help your daughter get married. You may not be able to initiate the shidduch the way you can with your son who can give kiddushin, but you can position her to be an attractive catch, an attractive find, and therefore dekavtu ala inshi, and people will be interested. Okay. Now, Kedushin Lamud Amud Beis. Lamud Amud Bet. Lamud Amud Beis. Now, if you turn the page for a moment, on page 2 you have the Ran. The Ran in his commentary on the riff in the back of the Gemara. And if you look at the first underline where I wrote A in the left-hand column, the Ran comments, to Nilbashim and Nechasya, you can give her money, she can get dressed nicely. Men will kafti, they'll be jumping to get a chance to have the opportunity to date her. And then they're going to marry her, adds the Ran. Says the Ran, mashma, bito. So you see that, unlike Bris Mila, and unlike Pidgin Aben, where obviously the father is only responsible to a son, not a daughter, unlike Talmud Torah, where the father's only obligated to teach his son. We went through the sugya last year, kila ma'amda tiflus, what is tiflus? That you shouldn't, one shouldn't teach the daughter Torah Shabbat Peh. We went through that whole sugya last year. But in contradistinction to the cases where the father's obligated only to the son, not to the daughter, the Ran says, you see from our sugya, the father's obligated to the daughter as well. She has to find a wife for his son, find a husband for his daughter. Says the Ran, uvahalo boy begemara, now, when it came to Bris Mila and Pidyon HaBen and Talmud Torah, in each of those examples of the Brisa, the Gemara went on to ask, how do we know the mother's exempt? Maybe the mother has to give a bris for her son. Maybe the mother has to do Pidyon HaBen for her son. Maybe the mother has to teach her son Talmud Torah. And the Gemara, through Psukim, and talking about the fact that nobody's obligated to do it for her, she's not obligated, therefore she can't be obligated vis-a-vis someone else. You remember we went through that at the end of the last man, at the end of last year. But says the Ran here, why didn't the Gemara, what about her in this case? Is the mother obligated for the son? She's exempt from Pidyon HaBen and Bris Mila and Talmud Torah. Is the mother obligated to get her son married? Is the mother obligated to get her daughter married? Says the Ran, we didn't mention it. Why? The kevan the divrei kabbalah ninu svarahi the chiyecha the isha petura melalamed is bino milavdosa mishum the ilo mifkada aperia varivia. So the yasiya nami petura kevan the lamifkada nami aperia varivia. Just like she's exempt from bris and she's exempt from pidyon haben and she's exempt from talmud torah. Why? Because all three, she herself is not obligated. If she's not obligated, how could she be obligated towards another? So certainly here too, she is exempt. Why? Because what's at the root of the mitzvah to get married, according to the Ran? Perya Varivya, Peru Ravu. She's exempt from Peru Ravu, therefore, getting married is like Bris and Pidyon HaBen. Now, You can argue on the Ran. First of all, the Ran points out also the Kevin de Divrei Kabbalah. The Gemara didn't even bother telling us this because even the obligation for a father is only derived from Divrei Kabbalah. Even the father's responsibility is only derived from the Pasuk in Yirmiyah. It's from Nach. It's not from Torah. So we didn't even bother asking why she is exempt. But if you already want to know why she's exempt, the answer is, just like Bris Pidyon Rabbeinu Talmud Torah, she's not obligated in Peruvu. She's not obligated in Peruvu. She's not obligated to get her son or daughter married. Now you could argue on the Ran for two reasons. Number one, you could argue on the Ran, because who says the obligation to get married is Peruvu? We discussed that also last year. Machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh. Is it even a mitzvah to get married? For the Rambam, it's a birchas ha-mitzvah. For the Rosh, it's a birchas ha-shevach. You may recall we went through that whole sugya. You could listen to all these shiurim online. So number one, this seems to be along the lines of the Rosh, that pru-revu is getting married. Really, the mitzvah is pru-revu. There is no mitzvah to get married. It's a hechsher mitzvah for pru-revu. But you could also argue in the Ran for a different reason. Unlike Bris and Pidyon HaBen, which the woman is mufka, which the woman is entirely outside of, here, she is a necessary component of Pru Revu. She does have a shaychas to Pru Revu. True, she's not obligated proper in the mitzvah, for first of all, she's obligated in a corollary of the mitzvah named Sheves. Women do get a mitzvah of Sheves, which is even beyond Pru Revu to populate the world. But moreover, though she doesn't have the direct obligation in Pru Revu, she obviously most certainly plays a role. She plays that role for about 9 months. You could ask her all about it. She'll be glad to tell you. And it's impossible to fulfill without her. So therefore, you may say that she too carries that obligation. But anyway, that's what the Ran takes from here. Okay, Vayter in the Gemara. Back to page one. The next thing the Gemara learns from the Braisa, the next item on our list from the Braisa was Lelamdo Umnus. The next topic in the Braisa was the father is responsible to teach the child a profession. He's got to learn a profession. He has to be able to earn a few shekel. Says the Gemara, Minalan, how do you know a father's obligated to teach his son how to earn money? Amar Chizkiya da Amar Kra. The Pasuk says, where's this pasuk from? Koheles, also midivrei Kabbalah. The pasuk says in Koheles, re'e chayim im isha asher ahavta. Re'e chayim, look at the life im isha with the woman asher ahavta that you loved. Go see and learn the umnus to be able to provide and sustain yourself. Chayim, how do you have chayim? How could you have life? Only with what? Im isha. Says the Gemara, Im Isha Mamashi, if the Pasuk was a reference to your actual biological wife, Kishem Shachayev Lasio Isha, Kachayev Lalamda Unus. So, how do you have life with your wife? How can you provide her with life? You need a livelihood. The shorash of livelihood is live. In order to be able to live, you need a livelihood. So, Chayim Im Isha Asher Ahavta. How are you going to build a life with that woman? Who's going to pay the bills? Right? The Gemara is very chazal. We're very, very against going around door to door, collecting money, living off of charity. It was not an option. That was a b'dieved. That's a fallback. People have a mitzvah of tztaka. But you have to design a livelihood in your lifestyle. So, Rei Chaim and Yisha, Asher Ahavta, see the life with the woman you love. In seeing that life, it should be with a livelihood. V'im Torah hi. Alternatively, you could say that no, Isha here means, it's a reference to Torah. It means, Kishem Shechayev Lalamei Torah, Kachayev Lalam Do Umnas. Rei Chaim Im Isha. If you want a life with Torah, just like a father has to teach his son Torah, he also has to teach him in Umnas. So Chazal here provide two alternative ways to read, to understand the Pasuk. Both of them lead to the conclusion that the father is responsible to teach the child an umnas, a trade, a profession, a livelihood, either because in order to develop a life with the woman, to build a home, you need a livelihood, or even if it means it's Torah, it's an allusion to Torah, just like the father has to teach Torah, he also has to teach what he has to teach in umnas. This is a sentiment that Chazal have as well. If you turn to page 3, On the right-hand column, you have a Mishnah in the second parak of Avos. The second Mishnah in the second parak of Avos says, "Megamliel benoshar b'Yuda Anasi Omer, Yafa Talmud Torah im derech eretz, sheigia shneim mashkachas avon." That it's proper that Talmud Torah be coupled with what? Derech eretz. What does derech eretz mean here? Derech eretz does not mean good midos. Of course, Talmud Torah should be coupled with having proper midos. But here in the Mishnah, Yafa Talmud Torah im derech eretz means parnasa. Like Rav Hirsch's Torah im derech eretz. Derech eretz means participating in society, contributing to society, taking from society, but it means parnasa. V'chol Torah she'eni mam malacha sofa b'teila v'goreres avon. And the Mishnah continues, so much so that if all you do is learn Torah, and the Torah is not coupled with malacha, then it's going to be lost. Not only will it be lost, it will lead to avon. It will lead to iniquity. The Sefer Menachem Tzion, that's the simple understanding of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is telling us that don't think you can sit and learn Torah all day, live in poverty, who's going to support you, but that you need to couple your learning with putting it into practice. Choshen Mishpat, business values, ethics, derech eretz, participating in the world, yafet Talmud Torah with derech eretz, and Torah needs to be with malacha. Just as an aside, I brought up for you, is the Perush of Rav Menachem Ben Zion Zaks. In his commentary here on Pirkei Avos in the left-hand column, he writes, Kol Torah she'eni ma malacha. So he says, this is a Pidrush, that the malacha here does not mean livelihood or parnasa, but he says, Klomar Torah she'eni ma malacha haynu avoda v'yigil limuda. The malacha is in learning the Torah. Cheskas v'avtasa, sofa b'teila v'goreres avon. That if you want to be spoon-fed Torah, you're not willing to work for it, you don't break your teeth over it, you don't chazer it, you don't struggle with it, you just want to sit back, you want to read the English, you want it to be spoon-fed for you, you're not working on your skills, you're not trying to make a laning, trying to get through it yourself, you're not doing what's necessary to acquire it, so then the Torah is betela, and then goreres avon. So that's how he interprets the word Kol Torah she'eni ma malacha. He's not interpreting the word malacha to be livelihood. He's interpreting the word malacha in this context to mean you got to work on it. And that's he alludes to the pasuk in Bechukosai. Amarashi yachal zakiyam mitzvos k'shu omer zos ves mitzvosai tishmaru v'asisim osam harikiyam mitzvos amor mani mekayim es Bechukosai im Bechukosai teilechu shetiyu amelim b'torah. It means that you should be amelim b'torah. So you see that Torah is most authentically acquired when it's done so with toil, with effort, when it's not looking for it to come easily and be spoon-fed to us. They say about the Vilna Gaon that he once had a dream in which the Magid came to him. And the Magid came to him in his dream and wanted to reveal to him the secrets of Torah. Kedugmas ha-magid shal Beis Yosef, just as the Magid used to come to the Beis Yosef. Ach, usirav l'kabal b'menu. But in his sleep, the Gra rejected this Magid. Shu chafetz rak b'torah sheyeshim ha-malacha v'amal iyun ha-torah. Magid means an angel. An angel tried to come to him to sleep and say, here's the ripe shot, here's the Torah, here are the secrets of Torah. But the Vilna Gaon said, get lost. I don't want it spoon-fed. I want to work for it. Amelus and Yigiyah. So this is how Rav Menachem Ben Zion Zaks interprets the Mishnah. Kol Torah she'eni ma malacha, he understands it to mean malacha, the work you have to put in. But the simple pasha pshat, the simple understanding of the Mishnah is Kol Torah she'eni ma malacha, or Yafet Talmud Torah im derech eretz, is the idea that Torah requires being accompanied by the pursuit of a profession. Yes?
I find that the Mishnah itself makes more sense to me than the Gemara in terms of telling somebody you need to go out and get a job. In other words, excuse my expression, but it seems weak. It's almost like you say, it says, give me a pasuk in the Torah that tells you that that Moshe Rabbeinu wore a yarmulke. It says, Vayelech Moshe. Moshe went. Would Moshe go without a yarmulke? So he wears, so this is the way we learn it. But here, in other words, I have to take a look at the pasuk. I have to to interpret the pasuk out of left field to understand that it means that to go out and get a job.
Right.
Whereas the Mishnah makes more sense to me.
I hear. What do you mean the Mishnah? Which Mishnah? The Pirkei Avos Mishnah.
Yeah.
I think this is different. You have to look at it in the context of the Braisa. The Braisa is talking about what are paternal responsibilities and obligations. Maybe the father says, the kid's on his own. I got to get to work. I got things to do. So the Mishnah of the Braisa was listing off, no, your father doesn't have the luxury of saying that. So in our day, we say, look, we outsource it. We send the child to school and they get a degree and they're responsible. But in the time of the Braisa, these were the things the father had to be able to budget his time and his resources to say, if I don't take my son into the business, teach him to be a blacksmith or a silversmith or a tailor or a farmer or a banker or a sandler, whatever it is, but that's the responsibility. So the Mishnah is listing, this is the basic paternal responsibilities, the father's responsibility and obligation. Now you can say, what do you need a pasuk? It's obvious. So Chazal don't operate that way. They use the Torah to show us what was obvious is actually mandated. Yes. Right.
You know, a woman wouldn't let her child go without being married, without taking over, without, you know, making sure they are taken care of in different aspects, work wise, whatever. Whereas a man would be less compassionate, be like, go out and get a job, go out and do this.
Okay. Maybe, meaning your father practices tough love more, so therefore the Braisa has to emphasize for the father, these are your responsibilities. The question is that the Gemara doesn't address. Is the father obligated to teach his daughter umnas? We just said he's not only obligated to get his son married, but he's obligated to get his daughter. How could he get his daughter married? It's not biyado. It is, get her dressed up nicely, give her a few shekel in hand, she'll be very attractive to boys. Is he responsible to teach his daughter? So it sounds like that's a 21st century egalitarian, teach his daughter an umnas. What do you mean? Kokvu debas melech panima. She should be locked up in the house. What do you mean is he obligated to teach her an umnas? So turn to page 4, the Makneh. Sefer HaMakneh, Rav Pinchas Hurwitz, author of the Hafla. On the bottom left of page 4, so the Sefer HaMakneh, which is the Sefer on Kedushin, he writes, I am Ashikosu b'chidushi b'ksuvus, mashmei hocha d'chiyuv ala'av l'asi es bito, kamo es b'no. The father's responsible. I'm sorry, the father is responsible to marry the daughter like his son. Right, he concludes, like the Ran, that the father is obligated to teach the daughter. From our Gemara saying, he could always get her dressed. Is it only his son? Or no? Is teaching an umnas? Right, so the first part of the list we covered. Bris, Pidgin HaBen, Talmud Torah, that he clearly was responsible only to a son, not to a daughter. Now we got to one on the list, getting them married. We said that's the son and the daughter. Now we're continuing with the list, which is to teach a profession. Now the question arises, who is that to? We did only the son, then we hit the son and the daughter. Are we back to only the son? Logically, it makes sense to say, this too now is the continuation of a list where the father is responsible to both the son and the daughter. This is the question of the Makneh. And he says, maybe this is subject to the two interpretations of the Pasuk. Right? We quoted the Pasuk in Koheles. See the life with the woman, asher after that you love. The Gemara said, maybe the woman means you're building a life with her, you have to earn a livelihood to support her. Or maybe woman here is a reference, it's a remnant to Torah. And just like the father has to teach Torah, he also has to teach a livelihood. He says, according to the Pshat and the Gemara, that Isha is a remnant to Torah, and because the father has to teach him Torah, he has to teach him umnos. Well, when it comes to a daughter, you're not obligated in Talmud Torah. Of course, you have to teach her the halachas that apply to her and so on. But you're not obligated in Talmud Torah proper. So therefore, if we're likening it to Talmud Torah, then this is only an obligation vis-a-vis the son, not vis-a-vis the daughter. However, inima de isha mamishka amakra, to hukash umnus l'chiv nesuin, im kein gam be'isha kevin shechayev lasiya, chayev nalam l'lam de umnus. But if you're likening it to marriage, just like he's obligated to get his daughter married, then he would also be obligated to
make sure she has what to eat.
Mia mistabra mitakra tzlima da umnus chayim afa isha bechlal, da otu gav raboi chayiv and asher raboi chayiv. The fact that we're calling livelihood life, right? Livelihood, live, life. So what, only your sons need to live? Your daughters don't need to live? So therefore, after Baila Chayib Mizonosea, even the one she's married, the husband has an obligation to sustain her, Mikom Makom, Bametis Parnes, Imtis Almin. What happens if he dies? Otis Garish, or they get divorced. Vigam Tachtov Aisachayev is Maisei Adea. Dafilu, Vashiz Kaimlon, Dekofalasos Betzemer. So the Makna actually concludes the Gemara, based on the two interpretations of the Pasuk. The Makna is inclined to say that this obligation of the Braisa is not just on the son, it's on the daughter as well. He's obligated to teach his son in Umnas, he's obligated to teach his daughter in Umnas. Again, you might ask, why do you have to teach your daughter in Umnas? When she's single, she's under your roof. When she's married, the husband's obligated in Mizona. So he told you the answer. And this is excellent advice in our day. Chalila, she becomes a widow. Chalila, she gets divorced. Chalila, you're not around anymore. Teaching her independence. You know, they say this is one of the biggest shifts in the Jewish community. Women have a sense of financial independence. They're able to achieve different types of decisions. Yeah. Oh, now he's got to learn an umnus. She's got the umnus. She's supporting him. Yeah. Now that's the Gemara. He receives Masa Yadeha. When she works, he gets to keep it. The Gemara creates all these reciprocal relationships. That why does he get to keep Masa Yadeha? That's not in lieu of the Mizonos. I think that's in lieu of the fact that he Pidyon, he's obligated to redeem her. That if she gets captive, he's obligated to redeem her. The Gemara concludes all these reciprocal relationships, which nowadays, I once asked Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, that when you go through the Gemara Ksubas and you learn all of these rules about Masi Adeha, Nichse Malug, Nichse Tzon Barzel, all the financial terms and financial infrastructure of Chazal, how does that apply in 2017? Joint bank accounts, separate bank accounts, responsibilities, and essentially it's null and void. We've overrided it with minhag hamakom in the way that we all interact together. In other words, would a woman still be obligated? So the Gemara already concludes that if she's willing to give up the right to be redeemed, should she been taken captive, she could keep her masayadah. So there are certain reciprocal responsibilities and obligations that the Gemara references. Okay, next. What's the next responsibility? Yesh omrim. So the Braisa lists one more thing. Yesh omrim. Af lahashito benahar. Even to teach him to swim in the river. My taima. Why does a father have to teach a kid to swim? You're going to drag him out of the Beis Medrash? The father's got to give up time. Time is money. He's got to give up learning to go teach the kid to swim. Why? Says the Gemara, chayusahu. Because he needs to be able to live. What was the mode of transportation in the time of the Gemara? In a boat. Long distances, Medina Sayam, Medina Sayam, you traverse the ocean in a boat. What happens if it capsized? What happens if it went down? Chiyusa. You have to be able to teach. Now it's interesting, here we don't quote a pasuk. We quoted Yirmiyo, we quoted Koheles. Here we don't quote a pasuk. Here we just say that it's okay, but teaching him umdus is also for his life. I think it's as much for his life as it is teaching him to swim. I'll tell you an interesting story. A few summers ago, I wanted to go skydiving. So I asked one of my rebbeim, a world-class Talmud Chacham, whether I could go skydiving. So I ended up going, I went skydiving twice. My wife went skydiving twice. In Israel, only I would only do it in Israel, where you jump out with Tanchanim, tremendous. Not by myself, I was attached, I'm not crazy. It was in tandem, attached to somebody. So his answer, was a huge Talmud Chacham, he said, that he once spoke to Rav Nissen Alpert, a Talmud of Rav Moshe, one of the Rosh Hashiva at YU, the Shaila, when he was younger. Rav Nissen Alpert told him, Mistama, not only can you should. Why? Because in the time of the Gemara, there was an obligation of a father to teach his child to swim. Why? Because the mode of transportation was on a boat. You had to know what to do if the boat went down. Today, the way we traverse the ocean is on a plane. You have to know what to do if the plane goes down. So, Mistama, it's okay. And I highly recommend it. It's a tremendous... I did it, sure, twice. It's not a makam sakana more than getting on 95. Your trip to shul for this afternoon shir was more dangerous than my jumping out of the plane. Statistically, it's 1,000% clear. Going on I-95 any hour of the day is much more dangerous than jumping out of a plane. And you'll say, yeah, but I have to go on I-95. Why did you have to jump out of the plane? And I'll tell you, you don't have to go. 3/4 of the places you go to on I-95, you didn't have to go to if it was a sakana. So anyway, yes, Hami. Of course. Lalam, just like here, Lashito Benar, you have to teach him. You have to be with somebody who knows what they're doing, is going to teach you. Oh, maybe. The key of Lashito Benar is to give driving lessons. Yeah, I'm going through that with my third daughter. I've been through this most. Be a chazaka. Yeah, that's, I don't know. B'makam sakana, chomer tvei. I don't know. So, okay. Chamira sakanta meisura. Okay, vaiter. The Braisa then lists another. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he adds another thing. Kol she'ena malam de umnas. In fact, says Rabbi Yehuda, if you don't teach your son a profession, malam de listus. You're teaching him to be a ganav, a gazlan. You're teaching him to be a thief, a robber. Ask the Gemara, listus sakadaitach. Really? You're teaching him to be a robber? Of course you're not teaching him to rob. Ella ki'ilu malam de listus. As if, meaning, if he doesn't have an honest way to make a living, he's going to scramble to make a living. He's going to cut corners. So, therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, of course, you have to teach an umnas. Ask the Gemara, my benayu. What's the Gemara's question, my benayu? Rashi. My benayu. My kamosiv Rabbi Yehuda. It's a good question. The Braisa had already listed, you got to teach your son a profession. Mm-hmm. What was Rabbi Yehuda adding? And if you don't teach him a profession, it's as if you taught him to be a thief. What was he adding with that? It's as if you taught him to be a thief.
No reason.
No? It's giving a reason, wasn't it? What's Rabbi Yehuda adding? Usually, my benayu is a machlokas between two opinions. We want to know the practical difference. The my benayu, says Rashi here, doesn't mean what's the practical difference between the two opinions. It means what is Rabbi Yehuda adding with this additional statement? He's bolstering, he's not disagreeing, it doesn't really seem to be expanding. What is he really adding?
Giving a reason.
What?
Being a reason why you should teach him. What's a big deal?
Okay.
I don't see that.
Rashi seems to be saying
Umnas and business.
Umnas is business. Umnas is a skill, a trade, right. The ability to earn a living.
Maybe because there's no pasuk to tell you that you need to do it, so he wants to zero in on the act.
No, this one had the pasuk. The swimming didn't have the pasuk. The lambda umnas had the pasuk. That was the pasuk in Kohelas. So the Gemara answers, Ika benayu, Rabbi Yehuda's adding. What's he adding? To agmare iska. When the father teaches him business, it's not a trade, he's dealing in commodities. I don't mean commodity trader, I mean he's selling wares. He's selling wares. So how is that a nafkamina between the two? So see Rashi. Im lamdu schora latanakana hare lamdu chayim. Rabbi Yehuda does at the time umnas davka. So if it means you have to teach him to a livelihood, if you teach him to deal with trade of wares, so then you fulfilled the responsibility to earn a living according to the Tanakhama. What Rabbi Yehuda was adding was, that's not enough. You have to teach a trade. Because what happens if the commodity dries up? What happens if he no longer has the wares to trade? So it's not just that you have to say to him, here's 1,000 tchotchkes from China, go sell them. You've not fulfilled the mitzvah. You say to your son, I've imported 1,000,000 tchotchkes from China, go start a deal a day website. You haven't taught him. Unless you teach him how to create a website, then it's a trade, let's say. So that's the nafkamina. If the issue is you have to teach him how to make money, so even if you get him 1,000,000 tchotchkes, he makes money. If the issue is you have to teach him skill set, a trade, a profession, something that transcends the immediate inventory, then you would not fulfill it just by giving him schora, just by giving him inventory. Okay. Weiter. Now we go back to our Mishnah. The second thing in the Mishnah was ko mitzvos ha'av ala ben. And there the Mishnah said, the mitzvos ha'ben ala av was one thing. The second half of the Mishnah was kol ha'mitzvos ha'av ala ben. And the Mishnah said, both echad anoshim ve'echad nashim chayavim. Men and women are equally obligated. My ko mitzvos ha'av ala ben. What is the definition of the Mishnah's category? All the mitzvos of a father on a son. If it means the mitzvahs that a father has towards a son, namely like, give me an example. Bris, pidyon ben, and so on. So nashim chayavos. So that women are not obligated in that. Vatanya av chayav b'no l'mulav l'vdoso aviv in imolo. So when you said the mitzvahs ha'av ala ben, men and women are obligated in, clearly, you can't be talking about pidyon ben and bris because that women are exempt from. So, Amar of Yehuda, what are we talking about? Hachi kamar kol mitzvos ha'av ha'mutolos ala ben lasos le'aviv echad anashim ve'echad nashim chayavim. We're not talking about the parent's responsibility to the child that men and women are not equal. Only the father's obligated in pidyon ben and bris milah and talmud Torah. But we're talking about the obligations of the child towards the parent, and that men and women are equal. What are obligations of the child towards the parent? What are such obligations? Kibud av va'em and mora. You have to have honor and you have to have awe. And the Gemara now is going to get into the sugyas of defining both of those. Now, like Rashi writes, "Mutalas ala ben kegon kibud umora." Now, we're not going to get into this, but I'll just raise the question. It should bother you. What was bizarre about the Gemara's formulation just now? The Mishnah said the following: Kol mitzvos ha-ben ala av, men are obligated, women are exempt. Kol mitzvos ha-av ala ben, men and women are equal. The Gemara wants to know, what are the mitzvos ha-av ala ben? Are they bris and pidyon ha-ben? Nah, can't be. Why can't it be? Because women are exempt, and we just said women are obligated. Why was that a strange answer? What should it have said? We just spent the last five shiurim on this. The first half of the Mishnah, kol mitzvos ha-ben ala av, were mila and pidyon ha-ben. We've already defined it. We obviously don't think ben ala av and av ala ben mean the same thing. So why did the Gemara have to come to the answer of, well, echad anashim, and nashim are petura, so it can't be that. You should have known it from the fact that we've already defined the first half of the Mishnah as being pidyon ha-ben, bris mila, and so on. It's a very strange formulation. Rishonim are bothered by this, but we're not going to get into it. We're going to go weiter. Tanina la detana rabbanan. We have a Mishnah, which is a support for that which the rabbanan said in the Braisa. It says in the Torah, ish. Right? What's that pasuk? Ish. It's the pasuk, ish imo v'aviv tiro'u. A man, his mother and father, he shall have awe of. Ein li ela ish. I only know that a man is obligated to have awe of his father. Isha minayin. How do I know a woman is obligated? Kishu omer tira'u in the plural. Awe in the plural. Hare kan shnayim. It means the mitzvah was given to both. So that, in other words, we've had this before. When it says ish, ish can mean a man, gender man. Ish can mean generically man, humanity. How do I know what ish means? So I might have thought ish means a man biologically, tirou from the plural, it retroactively reveals to me that ish didn't mean the biological man, it meant the generic human man. Harein kan shnayim. Im kein matam adlomar ish. So why did we use the word ish? Because often we use ish in order to be memait, in order to say it doesn't apply to a woman. Why do we say ish? Ish sipek biyadolasos. Isha ain't sipek biyada la'asos. Mnesha rishus acherim aleh. So even though both men and women are equally obligated in honoring their parents, that's only true until what? Till they're married. The man always has the wherewithal to continue to honor his parents. She loses that wherewithal. Ain't sipek biyada la'asos. She's not able to. Why? Shirashus Acherim Aleha.
Her husband.
What does it mean, Rashus Acherim Aleha? Says Rashi, Rashus Acherim Baila. Now it doesn't mean her husband can beat her, exploit her, take advantage of her. It means that she has responsibility to her husband. They have it towards each other, by the way. The Rambam quotes, she has to honor him and he has to love her. How does the Rambam define a husband has to love her? Based on the Gemara Ksubas. How does he define it? He has to spend more money on her than on himself. If he spends $100 a month on himself, he's got to spend $200 a month on her. $1,000 a month on himself, $2,000 a month on her.
Wow.
So again, it's not one directional. The husband deserves all the honor. He's the king. She has to bow down to him. We are not a misogynistic religion. It is reciprocal. She honors him, and he loves her, meaning he has to work his tail off to earn enough money to give her more than he's even spending on himself. But in the context of this reciprocal relationship, she's meshubud to him. She has to honor him, which means ain't sipik biadalaso, she's not able to honor. Amar avidi bar avin amar rav nizgarsha. Now what happens if she gets divorced? Shneim shavim. So now she goes back to having the responsibility, the obligation to honor her father. Says Rashi, nizgarsha mibayla harei ki achia b'mitzvas kibud. She goes back to being like her brother. So when she was married, she has a different status than her brother vis-a-vis the parent. But when she, if she, God forbid, gets divorced, then she goes back to being like her brother, having to honor the father. Look at Taisus. Zog Taisus. V'yafagav demasi adel abaylas midrabonan. What do you mean, reshus acherim aleha? The fact that the husband is entitled to her masa yadeha, when she's living at home, the father's entitled to it. Whoever is providing her mizonos is entitled to her masa yadeha. Now, that right, the entitlement of the husband to masa yadeha, is only midrabanan, and kibir aveim is midaraisa. So Tosfos is bothered here. Why is she put her responsibility to her husband above her obligation to her father? The responsibility to her husband is derabanan, is rabbinic. Responsibility to the father is d'oraisa, is biblical. Why does she put the responsibility to the husband over the father? Answers Tosfos, mikol makom eina metzuya etzel avia ela etzel baila. The answer is she's got to go to bed at night with the husband, not with the father. That's who she's sharing a room with. That's who she's building a life with. That's who she's going to grow old with. That now becomes her responsibility. If you look at the Ran, the next page, go to page 2. It's the second underline of the Ran, Beis. The Ran writes, V'kamash malon d'mishum d'nisa is l'paka chiyuva minei. I might have thought that once she gets married, even if she gets divorced or is widowed, she nevertheless continues to be exempt from obligation in kibbut av'eim. Says the Ran, no. Once, if she were to get widowed or divorced, she goes back to being like her brothers and goes back to having the obligation of kibbut av'eim. How do we paskin? How do we paskin?
Like this one?
This is halacha l'maisa, gentlemen. How do we paskin? Like when your in-laws are over and your wife brings the bowl of soup to the table Friday night, whose plate does she put it on? The husband or the father? What's the halacha? Zok to Shulchan Aruch, page 6. Shulchan Aruch Yordesim and Resh Mem, Sif Yud Zayin. Page 6. Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha shavim b'kivod of Mora, shal av ve'em. Both a boy and a girl are equally obligated to honor and to have all of their parents. Ella, sha'isha ein biyad alasos, shehim ishibedas labayla. Once she gets married, when there's a conflict, she is absolved of her obligation to her father, her parents, and now her primary loyalty is to her husband. So long as she's married, the husband comes first. If God forbid she's divorced or widowed, then she goes back to resuming her obligation. Zog the shach, sif katan yutes, the underlined top right. Zog the shach, v'niradim ein baila makbid chayeves b'chol dover she'efshar k'mo ha'ish. Now, when you're married, does that mean you have no responsibility at all? So your husband's out of town on a trip and your father says, get the slippers, and you say, get your own slippers, I'm married now. Is she exempt across the board? Explains the Shach, no. The exemption is limited to a conflict between the husband and the father. And that's when the husband comes first. But if there's no conflict, of course she has a responsibility. It doesn't mean when you're married, your husband takes the place of your father. Continue to have the responsibility of kibbut av'im towards the father. If there's a conflict, that's when the husband. Should there be a conflict? Turn the page. The Sefer Chassidim. Hold on. Sefer Chassidim. The great Sefer Chassidim writes in Shin Lamed Hei on page 7 in the booklet. Ha'av shebito nesua v'osekes b'tzorchei baila v'ha'av tzorach la lo yitzava lebito lasos tzorachav kozman she'osekes b'tzorchei baila v'mabal tov yomar lalasos tzorchei ha'av kodem. Sefer Chassidim gives what I believe is the proper Jewish approach. What should happen when she comes to the table with the bowl of soup? Here's the halacha. She begins to put it on her husband's plate, and her husband should say, no, dear, give it to your father first. That's what should happen. So what's the halacha? The halacha is the husband comes first. Once she's married, and there's a conflict, she's got to show a priority, she has a choice to make. Halacha, siman resh mem, the husband comes first. Says the Sefer Chassidim, if the husband is a smart man, he says, put the father first. So he knows that he comes first, but he's using his coming first to say, the father. Basically, a good husband takes his wife out of a conflict. I don't want you to have a conflict. So therefore, give your father first. Hold on, I don't want to run out of time. Yeah.
I was going to say that, but I think the son has an obligation to honor his father. So he should be the one giving, not even sell his wife. That's he should give it to his wife.
It's a perfect segue to our last source. Tshuvas van Hagos. Rav Moshe Sternbach and his Tshuvas van Hagos. Yerodea, Chela Gimel, Yerodea Simon Resh Ayin Zayin. And here he's dealing with the definition of Geder Kibbut Av'im Ba'avi Avi V'chama V'ish Nesu. The next several weeks, you may get sick of this, we're going to talk about Kibbut Av'im. And within the sugya of Kibbut Av'im is the question, are you obligated to honor your in-laws? You're obligated to honor your parents. Are you obligated to honor your grandparents? Now, basic derech eretz, v'yahav t'lo reyecha kamocha, I'm not talking about. I'm talking about the Torah's definition. Right. Kibbut and mora. For example, kavod means you've got to get them their slippers and feed them, and it's got to even come out of your pocket. Mora means you can't sit in their seat. You don't call them a first name. Can you sit in your father-in-law's seat? Can you refer to him by his first name? Are you obligated in kibbut av'im to grandparents and to in-laws and so on? So in this context, Rav Moshe Sternbach, you turn the page on page 9, the left-hand column, he addresses this. U'bezen nicha kushas l'chaye adam. The chaye adam asks a great question, Phil's question. Lama isha paturim b'kibur aviyah u'mishim ishim l'chayevas b'chavod baila v'tama d'neima d'kevin shikam hu chaye b'chavod chamiv imkein afi chayevas l'chabir aviyah shihi u'baila chayev b'chavodo. What do you mean conflict between husband and father? The husband shares her obligation to honor his father-in-law. So how could the answer be he comes first? He shares the chi of the obligation to honor the father-in-law. That's the chayi adam's kasha. Ayin b'shach, she'ev me'abach, rak ha'shar zekeinim chashuvim. Pischei tshuva, rai mikan, di'ish nesu ha'ptur mikibir av, yishom ha'daf im chayiv yosem, shar zekeinim chashuvim, mikom ha'kom kil tuva mikibir av ha'alma, b'ish ha'labayin l'chayiv chamir. So Rav Moshe Sternbach tries to answer it by saying the obligation to honor your in-laws is not the same as kibbut av'im. You have to honor them a little bit more than stam, a stranger, but it's not the level of kibbut av'im.
What is the source of kibbut
av'im? So again, we're going to leave this because we're going to come back to it in coming weeks. But I wanted to just bring it to you in this context, like Phil asked the question. So his answer is...
But I'm talking for him, it's his parents.
What do you mean his parents?
It's the in-laws.
Are you talking about if his soup, what if she brings a bowl of soup and he's sitting with his parents?
Right.
For sure she should give it to his father.
Yes. Okay. No, she should give it to his father. Or he should.
No, her responsibility is still to him.
Right.
His responsibility is to his father.
That's
right.
What I was saying.
Right.
The mashgiach in Long Beach.
Yeah.
And also the Rosh Hashiva's daughter, who's married. When they're at the same table, she puts the soup in front of her husband. He picks it up and eats it.
Okay, like the Sefer Chassidim.
Yeah, but not she fakes the move. And he's
Sefer Hasidim seems to be he should fake the move.
And in my children's house, my daughter-in-law puts the soup in front of him, and he picks it up.
So that's not what the Sefer Hasidim says. I would go with the Sefer Hasidim. And my Baal Tov Yomer Lalasos Tarcheya Av Kodem. If the husband's good, he tells his daughter, "Take care of your father first. Put the bowl right on his plate. You don't have to go through my plate to the plate. It's going to spill. By the time you play, plates, there'll be no soup left in the bowl by the time it reaches his plate." So again, I just wanted to raise that Moshe Sternbach's quote in the Chayyadim who asked the Kasha, "What do you mean she has a conflict between her husband and her father, not his her father?" But he also is responsible
somewhat
in covered to his father-in-law. He says, no, the obligation of Kibbut Ava'im to in-laws exists. It's not the same level of Kibbut Ava'im. It's more than just to a stranger. What is it exactly? We'll define it in the coming weeks.
If the grandchildren are serving, what's the obligation?
If the grandchildren are serving, who do they give it to? So they give it to the grandfather. Because both they and the and the parents are responsible, are obligated in Kibbut Ava'im to the grandfather. Yes. Nimtza Eitzel Baila, yeah. No. Oh, you're saying if he's serving the soup and she's sitting down. And now he wants to know, does he give it to his wife or does he give it to his father? Right. So this is Balad, it's the Rabbanan, yeah.
The logic is that she has to go home with him, right?
Right.
And he has to go home with her too.
Understood, but there's no premise of a chiyuv of kibud. She has a chiyuv of kibud.
Listen, point. We say the kibud is he has kibud aveim, right?
No, but she has a kibud to the husband.
To the husband, he has to work for his wife, with him.
Right.
So
he doesn't have an obligation to kibud to his wife. So halacha doesn't require. Halacha requires ava. He has to buy her a beautiful dress while she's serving the soup. I understand, but the premise is skewed. You're assuming that it's equated across the board. Chazal assumed that the premise was different. All right, we'll pick up from here with the sugyas of Kibbut Ava'im and Mitzvah Shem next week. Thank you again to the Petrovers. Thank you for sponsoring this week.